other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the new podcast on the internet sponsored by Dr. Danger's Cracktail. My name's Aaron, here are their personal pals Dave.
Hey, boys.
Brick.
Hello, boys.
And, of course, calling all the way from Old Ireland, Old Irish Nika.
Hello, boys.
Hello. Today on the podcast, we're talking about a short story that we've mentioned before. It's come up in a couple different venues in this podcast, most notably in Emi Game, where it was mislabeled as The Applicator. The story is Bartleby the Scrivener by Herman Melville. Famous short story, beloved by many, detested by some. We'll find out what the boys' reaction is today. But before we start talking about it, I want to show you all something. I have something that I have acquired. Wait, why do you say, oh God? Because I'm standing up and I'm buttoning my pants. Is that why you're saying, oh God?
Yeah, we're not clear you have pants on.
No. I'm not going to show you my cock. I have this over here. It's this big Hulk. Let me pull it. Creak, creak, creak. What do you guys think? It's a cannon.
We're playing sound.
Oh, okay. I thought you actually, God damn it. I made you the host so you can share your screen. I thought you actually had something.
Theater of the mind. I did bring out the cannon because it's time for cannon or cannon. Cue theme.
Keep it in school or blast that book into the ocean. Cannon or cannon.
Bartleby the Scrivener, written in 1853, or published in 1853, I should say, by Herman Melville, who we all know is the author of Moby Dick and so forth. I read the short story in high school for the first time. It's a widely canonized or anthologized story. I feel like it comes up pretty often as quintessential American short stories, you know, an important one. And I think that students read it pretty often. So it seems like a good candidate for our canon or canon discussion. So like I said, I read this in high school in like, I think my junior year of English. When did you all first encounter Bartleby?
Probably college.
College,
Dave.
Maybe high school for me.
Yeah.
But if not, it was college.
Yeah, and I was in a giant, one of those big Norton anthologies, and I don't know how it fit into the curriculum, but we did read it for sure. I'm sure it's on the EP list, which is probably why. So when I read the story the first time in high school, I loved it. I remember distinctly the conversation, the discussion we had in class. Everyone was mad at Bartleby, and the teacher, one of her questions was, do you think Bartleby deserved to die? And everyone said yes, except for me and my friend Michelle. I was like, that's pretty fucked. It's a very Texas thing to say, I suppose. I remember being like very disturbed by it. And I was, you know, I wasn't necessarily a very mature reader at that point, but I saw Bartleby as like a figure of rebellion and resistance. When I read it again in college, I had a somewhat different reaction to it and was more focused on the narrator and had a really interesting discussion in that class about Bartleby. But I want to see. So actually, we should do like basic plot and then we'll get into your whole reaction. So Bartleby the Scrivener is about a lawyer who works on Wall Street, who has copyists. This is in ye olde times. So you have to copy things by hand. And hires a third copyist named Bartleby, who is a sort of quiet, enigmatic figure. And does the work, but then begins to refuse to do the work. It begins with like refusing to do certain things and refusing to do any work, period. He just stands there in the office looking at the wall all day long. Eventually, the lawyer discovers that he lives in the office at night. And this, you know, bothers him, but not too much. The lawyer tries really hard to tolerate and sort of care for Bartleby in some ways, but it doesn't work out. And then, spoiler alert, if you haven't read Bartleby the Scrivener, go ahead and stop here. But eventually, Bartleby dies in prison. And the last line of the story is, ah, Bartleby, ah, humanity.
My elbow.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Brick, you came in firing. You said you were not a fan of Bartleby. Let's hear it.
I haven't read this story since college. I remembered liking it. I don't think it's a bad story, but I found it more annoying this time.
What's annoying to you about the story?
It feels like it's a story that's more about its point than the story, and that's not my favorite kind of story.
What is the point?
I feel like it's a story about how all these systems and things in society are kind of not real, and they only work if we allow them to work. And when we step aside, it all kind of breaks down. But then it also doesn't, because you just starve to death in jail.
Hmm. And so when you say this is about the point more than about the story, can you tell me more about what you mean by that?
I don't know. For its vintage, the characters are a little more quirky and characterized than maybe you'd go into expect, you know, especially the writing reads like Henry James, but it doesn't necessarily come out that way. Hmm. So I like that. But I don't know. I feel like this is a story made to make a point.
Hmm.
I don't know. I know that people don't necessarily agree on what that point is, but
yeah, I mean, that's why I asked that question. Like, what's the point? Cause I feel like this story to me is a sphinx. Every time I think I'm close to an answer, it's like, you look closer and there's 100 different angles to consider that are new. And it just resists my interpretation. Nico, what about you? What are your thoughts on Bartleby?
The only thing I remembered from when I read it 20 years ago was the classic kind of Bartleby's line. Yep. And then reading it again, I was like, oh, that's most of what's there. Like, it's long. Yeah. It's very long. And it's mostly just him preferring not to do things. So when I was in college, I mean, I kind of thought of it as like protest, you know? And now it seems more like he's just done. Like, he's just been broken at some point. And he just... you know, just stops doing anything and dies.
Yeah, well, there's that essentially an epilogue where the narrator says that he later learned that Bartleby, it's a rumor, he's not sure it's true, but that Bartleby may have worked in a dead letter office for years. And that like the psychological turmoil of reading these letters, speed to death is the line.
Yeah.
That he was broken by that. Like, all of a sudden he couldn't mm-hmm. handle the idea of like constantly thinking about misery, and that turned him into a husk, which makes sense.
Yeah. What I kind of dislike about the story is that it is like, I was super surprised. I mean, like thinking back, I shouldn't have been, but I was super surprised that it was in New York, because it feels so Dickensian to me. It's just like going on and on about turkey and nippers and
ginger nut.
Yeah. And in this space that he introduces turkey and nippers and ginger nut, you could have fit this entire story. There's not much that happens, but it's like probably 6,000 words something.
Yeah, I mean, those are two really good points. The characters are definitely Dickensian, that sort of, you know, turkey is short and he works best before noon, then he eats and then he gets like drunk, whatever, and can't work. And then nippers works best afternoon when he's like more angry and he's like lean and like tall and sort of young. It's like a clear cartooning of the characters like Dickens does for sure.
Aaron, how come you chose this? I know it's something that I think it's come up in the past a lot because you bring it up often. So it means something to you.
I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm always thinking about Bartleby to some extent. We just posted an episode about Lincoln the Bardo, and Dave, you put on Twitter the thing I said about my sadness radar.
Yeah.
And this one definitely tracks on that too, because it's a very sad story, but it's not sad it's not melodramatic sad. It's like, it's weirdly postmodern sad, right? It's like a weird, I think it's really advanced for its time. But I think because I can't reduce this story to a point is why I keep thinking about it. Because to me, Bartleby and the narrator and their relationship is so complicated and so real. Like, the idea of how do you treat someone who resists treatment? Like, how do you help someone who won't let you help them? And to what extent do you give up? And what happens when you give up? And how do you feel about that? Like, the narrators, when I was in high school, I cared about Bartleby the most. And I was like Nico, I saw Bartleby as a figure of rebellion or as a symbol of rebellion. But now, as an older reader, like, I am the narrator, right? Like, I want to do good. I want to be seen as someone who is like helpful and generous. And yet I also know that that's like a selfish thing to some extent. It's like it's vanity and ego. And also that there are limits on what you can do to be kind and generous. And that at some point that becomes interference. So it speaks to me on a number of those levels. And it's kind of like, I was reading this reading, whatever, I kept thinking of it as a ghost story. Like, it's a story that haunts me the way that Bartleby haunts the narrator. And he calls him a ghost several times, so it's pretty explicit. So I see it as like this thing I can't quite understand. Maybe it's because I'm not a very sophisticated thinker in terms of history, but like the thinking of Melville in 1853, thinking of those ideas and concepts and putting it to a story that has no resolution and just putting it out there and being like, well, figure this shit out, is to me really compelling. It seems like a miracle that it exists compared to, like, you know, I like Dickens too, but Dickens resolves pretty neatly, right?
It's more existential than Dickens is. I feel like Dickens is more like just human drama. There's not any like metaphysical questions of, you know, whatever the fuck, the same way.
Or if there are, they're mostly Judeo-Christian concepts of charity and will. And this one is about will too, I suppose. But its answer is more, yeah, like it's like a puzzle, whereas Dickens, I think, wants you to see the light in some ways.
The solution at the end, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's a human... This is not a humanist story, I don't think. Maybe it is. I don't know. Like I said, I have a hard time... I can't solve it because there's so many between threads to pull on. What did you make of the narrator and the narrator's actions? Like, how do you receive them? Is he misguided? Is he trying his best? Do you think the narrator is doing the wrong thing, the right thing? What is your take on the narrator here?
You know, one thing for me is I forgot how funny he is, funny the narration is.
Yeah, there's weird little jokes throughout, right? Mm-hmm. Even just the setup of Nippers and Turkey and Gingernut is kind of like lightly comic. It's like these weirdos who then keep wanting to beat the shit out of Bartleby,
right?
Because they're like violent psychopaths. Yeah, I mean, the narrator to me is, it seems like he, I don't know, I say he represents anything because I like I said, I can't find these ways to like sort of tie it down to one kind of meaning. But so the narrator is like what you want to think you are versus what you actually are, right? Like he even says at the beginning, he's like, I was an unambitious lawyer. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to like make money and like lay in the cut. And then he's confronted with the fact that he maybe cares about stuff a bit more or cares about people and has to answer those questions. But because Bartleby won't give him anything to care about besides his essential like humanness, he can't, there's like a, it's like a voice with no echo. You can't get an answer for what you're trying to say. Mm-hmm. So that he's caught in this, like this sort of realm of, well, what do you do? Like, how do you move on from this?
It is weird how like in the beginning I was kind of like, why aren't you just doing something? Just do something about it. Don't, because he just sits there and says like, well, there's nothing I can do. And kind of shrugs every time Bartleby pushes back against something. And then by the end, I was kind of more like, well, I guess that was the more empathetic way to do it. Although he does kind of like at one point he offers to just let Bartleby live in his house.
Yeah.
For a while. It's like, okay. But Bartleby won't even do that.
Like it's like his actions, like he moves his offices, right? Like he moves his entire office to a different place and leaves Bartleby there. And he's like, okay, if you just want to be here, fine. I'm just going to go away. It's like taking it. It's like the inverse of taking a dog to the woods and like letting it out if you don't want it anymore. It's like, okay, I'll go away and you just like stay here and be cool. And he's like, thinks he can dust his hands off. And then all of a sudden the landlord comes back and is like, you left that guy in the apartment.
Yeah, you're so responsible for that guy. And he's like,
yeah, but the dog came back and was like, why did you leave me in the room? But it's not the dog, it's the idea of the dog in somewhere.
Yeah.
I guess in that sense, it's kind of like almost like an anti-existentialist novel because it does, the narrator is constantly acting. Like he's constantly doing things to try and fix this. He gives him money, he makes requests, he moves his offices, he eventually like lets him get arrested basically, and then goes to see him in the prison. He's constantly acting, but nothing he does ever impacts Bartleby. Mm-hmm. Or at least he probably never reacts to it. He always just resists it and then eventually just dies. And there's that really harsh moment in the end of the tombs when he's talking to Bartleby and he's like, it's not too bad here, right? There's grass, you can see the sky. And Bartleby's like, I know where the fuck I am. Like, you put me in prison, you idiot. Like, fuck off. I don't want anything to do with you. How do you process that? You know, what is it the narrator's fault or is it not? Is it, I don't know, I find it compelling because there's just no way to answer those questions. And that is like scary. Right, have to live in those dilemmas and just tolerate the uncertainty. This time I was reading this too and thinking about Poe. It almost feels like a commentary or a response to Edgar Allan Poe stories, right? Because there's this thing of the narrator being haunted by something he can't quite answer, sort of like constantly sort of escalating in terms of intensity, right? I'm thinking of the Telltale Heart specifically, like where Bartleby is the heart that the narrator can't get rid of or can't resolve. Mm-hmm. And as his resistance escalates, the same with the beating of the heart would escalate in that story. And Poe died in 49, and they were obviously contemporary. So I wonder if there is some sort of crossover or commentary going on in this story.
I also read that it could have been a response to, like, he had just published a book and it got panned.
Mm.
Like one interpretation was that it was Melville saying, like, I would rather wither away and die than copy the other writers, which I thought that's was a bit of a reach. But
oh, I see. Yeah, because he's a copyist.
Because he's a copier, yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. It is another novel about a writer, or a story about a writer.
Yeah.
Like 1984 was. What did you make of that coda, the little epilogue paragraph about the Dead Letter Office? How does it strike you?
I didn't like that. I would almost rather he just kind of fades away than it seemed like trying to tie a bow on it that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Like an attempt to answer the question.
Yeah. Of why, like what's wrong with him basically. But there isn't really an answer. So that seems like, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like the publisher was like, you can't just leave it there when he dies in prison. Like, you have to give us something. And that was what he gave him.
I read that it was republished and he had made some changes. I wonder if that was the change. I didn't read enough to know what it was, but I wonder if that was the, when it was published 2 years later, if they added on that ending to be like, wink, wink, maybe there's something here. Even if it's I agree with you, Nico, it does seem like a sort of unnecessary appendage, but those last lines, on errands of life, these letters speed to death, are like, that's fucking amazing. Like, it's worth keeping the sort of obscure possible answer to have that line. I think that line is so good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have this canon here, and we have been loading things into it to shoot in the sea. So here on Canon or Canon, we are deciding whether these works belong in the Western canon of literature or should it be shot out of a cannon into the ocean to be consumed by Poseidon, who will then shit them out, I think was the conclusion from last time. Controversial decision last time with the book 1984 being shot into the ocean. It was really controversial. Lots of pushback on that. Let's see how Bartleby fares. We'll start with Nico. Nico, are you loading Bartleby into the canon, or are you going to establish Bartleby in the canon of literature?
So I was pretty determined when we started out to load him into a canon and fire him into the sea. But Aaron, I think you talked me into canon, into putting him in the one end canon.
Nice. The safe canon, not the danger canon.
Yeah, because as deceptively simple as it is, I think there is, like you were saying, it kind of stays with you and you start to, there's something about it that is more complex than it looks, I guess.
Right. Brick.
I also liked your reading and I agree with Nico, but I'm still shooting it into the ocean.
Why? Because you want to feed Poseidon?
For similar reasons to some other things we've talked about, I think this is really attached to a time and a place, and it's not as relevant now as it probably was when a lot of the kind of modern canon was established. And I think the effort it takes... I usually approach the canon or canon thing from like high school canon perspective, and I think what this story is offering to high schoolers is not as accessible as I kind of maybe would wish it would be. And I think there's other stories that can serve to engage them on, you know, thoughts of individualism or whatever else that the book might be approaching. I mean, the story might be approaching.
Right.
So from that, I think it's a good story and I think it should be read in maybe college and whatever else. But from a required reading canon standpoint, I'm shooting in the ocean.
Gotcha. So 1-1, Dave, where are you voting? Canon or canon?
I enjoy it a lot. Again, a lot funnier than I remember. And
okay, tell us why.
You know, I think it would be, I would leave it in the canon and maybe assign some readings around it, or at least, you know, a discussion around it about what is actually happening.
Like how to interpret uninterpretable stuff.
Sure.
I'm also single and canon. I like the story quite a bit, obviously. I would certainly keep it. I think it's worth studying on and on. Like I think it's, I'm glad we came back to it. Again, I haven't read it in a while. It's good to return to it. One of my classes in grad school, we had to write a short story, or short. It was basically fanfic, actually. It was a taking an established story and tell it from a different angle. And I wrote about Bartleby, but I told it from the story of Turkey. And it was just like the copyist having fun yelling at Bartleby and like getting really into hating someone, which is like about like leaning into being an asshole.
Does that still exist?
That story? Yeah. I've got it.
There's some fun to be had there.
It was in my thesis. So we could maybe read that. Maybe not. It was probably not very good.
Maybe yes.
So yeah, clearly the story is important to me, so I'm keeping the canon for sure. Also, I have not yet voted to shoot anything out of the canon, which might be revealing a flaw in this game for me that I made up. Well, Bartleby, welcome back. to the canon. Good to see you. I know you're upset about it and you will soon die, but good to have you while you are here. Listeners, tell us your thoughts on Bartleby the Scrivener. Did you read it in high school? And if so, did you also think Bartleby deserved to die because you were in my high school class as well? Or not? Tell us those thoughts on Twitter at YakBabies and also email us at yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com with all of your thoughts and reactions to this decision. Also, patreon.com/yakbabies, where you can get our bonus secret podcast, all the stuff we don't want you to hear for free because it's, you know, it's like blackmail, is there for a dollar. So if you pay us a dollar, you can hear all our terrible stuff. There's Bro to Bros, there's drafts, there's Emi games, and a bunch of other fun stuff going on there. So check that out. And then we have merch
available. Snack Babies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, holy shit. I can't believe I didn't talk about Snack Babies. Yeah, Snack Babies, the wildly successful spinoff podcast of Yak Babies, is on there as well. If you want to get into the world of snacks with your personal pals, definitely check that out. And then we have merch. What is it? tinyurl.com/yakbabies?
I believe so.
Great. For awesome t-shirts and posters and mugs designed by Brick. They're really, really funny and great and often profane. So check those out too. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners and especially their patrons, both past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, Kathleen, Bailey, Andrew, and William Howard Taft.